Hey, Rob B here with Rob D. You're listening to the Property Podcast, and this is a market update. They proved to be one of our most popular episode types that we do, and there's no surprise, especially when you see the news stories on offer this week. We've got 16-year high in house price sales. We've got the best performing areas in the UK for property right now, but we've also got some pesky mayors. All coming up in this week's show.
Welcome to the Property Podcast, where every Thursday morning, property investors come to be informed and inspired. Yes, loads of essential need-to-know material in this week's market update coming up in just a second. And make sure you stick around to the end for Hub Extra, where we're sharing a completely free resource that'll help you know yourself a little bit better. So let's get into our market update for this month. Lots to talk about, as ever. There are a few stories that landlords need to be aware of. We're also talking about pets. We're talking about what's going on in London. But the only place to start, really, is talking about what's going on in the housing market more generally, and in particular with house prices. Because Rob, a year ago, a headline like prices surge 8.6% in the year to February, which is the headline of the first story that we're looking at, it would just seem impossible. You never, ever, ever would have predicted when COVID was just kicking off that we'd be talking about this story now. It's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. But that's why I love property and property economics in particular, because what plays out often goes completely against what you would rationally expect. And actually, it's proven over the years in property, if you're a bit contrarian, then you will stand out and often do well. It's not obviously the case that you will always do well, but you're not punished as much in property, it seems, for being contrarian. And actually, when we look at it now, it all makes sense why this is playing out. And that's a whole podcast in itself. And luckily, you won't have to wait long for that podcast, because on next week's podcast, may as well let you know now, you don't want to miss it, because we are talking about property prices right now and the property boom we are in. Because Rob, you can dress this up however you want, but you cannot debate the fact that 8.6% growth in a year is absolutely boom territory.
It is. It totally is. There is no other way to describe it. And it is quite evenly dispersed as well. This isn't the case of some periods we've seen in the past. So like sort of 2013-14 comes to mind, where London was performing really strongly and it was dragging national price growth up, even though many other parts of the country weren't doing well at all. But now, over the last year, England is up 8.7%, Wales is up 8.4%, Scotland is 8%, Northern Ireland is lagging a bit at 5.3%. But that shows that it is across the board. And we'll come a little bit more in a minute to regional variations and what's going on where. But before we do, let's talk about volume of sales, because as you'd expect, prices tend to go up on volume, and that is what is happening. Property sales have hit a 16-year high, 180,000 transactions in the month of March, which is double the number in March last year, and the highest number since the ONS started compiling records on this stuff. Now, some of this will be due to the original stamp duty deadline. So if you recall, stamp duty was meant to be reinstated at its normal rates at the end of March. It was then extended to the end of June, after which, in England at least, there's a taper. But a lot of transactions will have been in progress and getting close to the end, trying to hit that original deadline. So March may be a particularly bumper month. We might not see another month with that many transactions. But even so, not just the numbers, but anecdotally from talking to agents and people in the industry, everything points to the fact that the market is going absolutely bonkers.
It is going bonkers. So let's look at some of that data. So according to the data from ONS, and this is covered in a few areas in the press, but I'm taking this from The Guardian, average prices in England rose 8.7%, Wales 8.4%, Scotland 8%, and Northern Ireland 5.3%. If we look at regions now, of note is at the bottom, but still, you know, this would be top a few years ago. Bottom is London with 4.6%, which is still, you know, very, very good. You know, you'd be normally happy with that. But obviously, if you don't want to be bottom, if you're into the old property investment game. And top is the Northwest at 11.9%. I mean, that's bonkers. That's really, really high. Now, that then takes us on to the Home Track report, which has recently come out as well. And the Home Track report comes out every month and it looks at city centres. So the data here may sound a little weaker, and we covered this recently on the Property Podcast, where we looked at the opportunity in city centres, again, being contrarian, as an opportunity right now, because everywhere is booming, but people have slightly switched off to city centres at the moment. That will obviously come back. To what level? We'll see. But there's still opportunity. Now, what's very pleasing, Rob, is we do predictions at the beginning of the year, and we're only a few months in, so we can't get too excited. But if I read out the top five areas, we have number one, Manchester with 6.6% growth. Second, Liverpool with 6.4%. Leeds in third, 5.4%. Nottingham in fourth, 5.3%. And Leicester coming in at fifth at a solid 5%. And actually tying with Sheffield at fifth with 5% as well. So all areas, I remember being mentioned a few months ago on the old pod. We might get the cities right this year, but we already know after a short period of time, and we said this 2 months ago, our growth numbers are embarrassingly low and way out this year. I felt ambitious at the time, saying that we will get 4% growth, and that was at the top of anyone's range. But as we see now, the worst performing area is doing better than that.
Yeah, felt quite edgy back then saying 4 compared to what everyone else was saying. But yeah, unless something very dramatic happens in the second half of the year, we're going to be very, very wrong. Looking at those cities as well, it's interesting because there's a lot of staying power in there. The cities that are up towards the top have been there for a long time, but you've got some notable climbers and fallers as well. So Edinburgh, if you recall, was right up there for the whole of last year, and I think the year before that as well. But that's now dropped to near the bottom, still putting on 2.9% over the last year, which is not bad, but it's now fifth from bottom, having previously been up the top. And then you've got a couple of climbers as well. So Belfast is really picking up. That's on 4.6. Newcastle as well, 4.2. Newcastle was right down the bottom, keeping the likes of Aberdeen company for a while, but it's rocketing up the table now. So it's interesting. It seems like there's a hardcore of about five cities that are consistently doing really well and showing no signs of slowing down. But then you've got others that are coming up and others that are dropping off. So we'll continue to look at that data. Now, I'm sure a pattern will not have escaped you as you've been listening to the last few stories we've covered. Pretty obviously, cities in the north are doing better than the south. And indeed, that is included in another story that we've been looking at, pointing out that in a complete reversal of the picture a few years ago, the north is doing far better than the south. On average, a 9.8% rise in the north compared with 6.4% in the south. For years, we were saying that this would end up happening, and finally it is. And London, as we've already said, is at the bottom of the pile. Even so, what I think is really interesting is that London has put on 4.6% over the last year, which is not what you'd expect when you go and look at what's happened with rentals in London. And this is something we covered on the podcast a month or two back. It's not necessarily the case that prices and rents move together. And in London, they're definitely not. Because Rob, if you go and look at Prime London in particular, some astonishing falls in rental numbers there.
So in an article from Landlord Today, the headline reads, Prime London flats rentals still in the doldrums, but for how long? What the article is suggesting is that rentals in London, particularly with flats and prime flats at that, are down from their peak in 2015 by 25%. And over the last year, rents have continued to fall throughout London in the prime flats market. The only respite for landlords in those areas are those who own family units in the prime areas. They're up a little bit, between 2 and 2.4% over the last year. And that's an obvious move where people are looking for a little bit more space. Now, if, on the other hand, you are renting in London, well, this is clearly great news because, as the article points out and we've talked about before, this is absolutely a renter's market right now in London, and there are some great deals to be had. Now, we've mentioned being contrarian a few times already in the podcast, but I think, again, when you see our overall market really performing strongly, and then you can see a market that is economically sound underperforming, it's one to watch. And we've said a few times now, we're watching London. We're far from saying, look at it for an investment, but it's the first time in a long time we've actually started watching it, because for a few years now, it's just been a terrible choice for investment. There's been far better options available across the country. But I think while the data is poor and the press is negative, that's when you start to go, oh, okay, maybe it's time to start looking. And yeah, London is definitely on the watch list right now. But what will need to be watched is Sadiq Khan's rent control measures, or proposed rent controls, Rob, because even though we've just talked about it's being a renter's market right now and it's difficult for landlords who operate in London, it seems Sadiq Khan is not happy with rental levels.
No, you look at the London market and you see opportunity for the future, perhaps, one to watch. Sadiq Khan looks at the fact that rents have fallen by nearly 10% over the last year and that the fact that they've fallen in real terms every year since he came into office and gone, you know what? What we really need here is rent controls. Now, we've talked about this in the past and so we'll only touch on it now, but the London mayor elections are actually taking place today. As you're listening, we're recording this slightly ahead, so we don't know the result, but it's almost guaranteed that Sadiq Khan will be re-elected. And a big pillar of his campaign has been rent controls. He needs to go to central government to ask for permission to actually do it. But even if he does, it's hard to see what the implementation would look like at the moment because rents in London aren't going anywhere. And this isn't just over the last year. Even before COVID, rents were not increasing in real terms. And my interpretation of the reason for that is that they got stretched as far as they could go. If you look at the historical data, in general, people tend to pay about a third of their income on housing costs. That's just how it averages out. And rents at the moment are costing people something around a third of their income on average. In London, that got up to nearly 50%. So even though wages in London are higher, rents got even higher. And it just, for me, hit a point where it couldn't be sustained anymore. And therefore, rents are either going to fall or stay at their current levels until wages catch up.
But if rental demand is down in London, where is the demand? Is it just disappear from everywhere? Have people stop renting? Well, no, not quite. Interestingly enough, there's been a bit of a mini ripple effect out. And what's quite interesting is a piece from Savills, which was in the Letting Agent today, which talks about the London commuter belt rental market performing strongly. So these are areas on the edge of London, quick commutes in, so Essex, Hertfordshire, Surrey, Kent, all those type of areas. So the rental market on average grow by 2.5% in the first 3 months of this year, which is quite significant. That's a lot of growth, and 5.4% year on year. So where London is still dipping on certain types of property, at least, it seems that people have just moved slightly out of London, and that's where the demand is right now. And the home counties are quite interesting because London is still one of the world's most important cities. That hasn't changed. If you want to debate it, you can, but don't do it here because I'm not going to agree with you. London is one of the world's greatest cities and will remain one of the world's greatest cities for the time being, unless something very dramatic happens. And let's face it, we've had a few dramatic things happen over the last few years and London still is there. Now, with that in mind, people still want to live close to London and work in London, but they may want a little bit more space, something we've discussed at some length on the podcast. So, seeing their home counties, the areas in and around London, do well is no surprise. And although we don't have property price data here available for this episode in those areas, we will have a look in the near future because I wouldn't be surprised to see them outperforming London for this year as well. I don't think that's an edgy thing to say. It kind of makes sense. So we'll see. But it's interesting that within London, rents are struggling. But just outside, where you can commute to London within an hour, it's doing really, really well.
Okay, let's move on a little from prices and rents and talk about a few quick developments that landlords should be aware of. The first one is not news as such, but it's news about potential news. So if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you'll be aware that plans have been underway for quite a while to give tenants more security of tenure. And a central plank of that is to get rid of something called Section 21 evictions, which is a way that landlords can ask tenants to leave without there having to be a reason like rent arrears or bad behaviour. This was announced a couple of years ago, maybe, can't remember, a long time, but hasn't actually happened yet. And there's still no news about it when it will actually happen. But next Tuesday, Parliament is going to reopen. And in the Queen's speech, it's expected that this might be the time that they announce that this bill will actually be brought forward to make this change. It'll be interesting to see if it is. This is something that we've known will be coming for such a long time. And if it is announced, that'll bring us closer to seeing the detail of it, which will be very important for investors to be aware of. But it'll actually be bigger news if it's not mentioned in the Queen's speech, because that'll imply that it's going to be even longer until it actually gets put before Parliament. So we'll wait and see what happens with that next week. And another quick one to be aware of is a change around the right to rent checks that you need to make as a landlord. The gist of this is that you need to check a potential tenant's eligibility to rent in the UK. Very controversial, but at the moment you have to do it. During COVID, the rules were changed so you could make those checks remotely. You didn't need to see the documents in person. But now the pandemic appears to be easing, that rule is changing back again. So from the 17th of May, you now need to be making those checks in person. So that should be something that you or your letting agent were doing prior to COVID. So how it all works should be familiar, but just need to be aware that the requirement to do that in person is being reinstated from the 17th of May.
Now, if you're a landlord in Manchester, this will not be a welcome news story. Andy Burnham, the Manchester mayor, a very popular figure in the North, sometimes referred to as King of the North, has vowed to launch a landlord licensing fee across the city. This is part of his manifesto pledge. Again, Andy Burnham, like Sadiq Khan, is probably a shoo-in for getting re-elected again. And for a lot of people, this will be a popular move because, let's face it, you can have a pop at landlords, you don't really lose too many votes. The problem with it, for me, is what does it achieve? I mean, this could be a whole episode in itself. I'm all for higher standards. I'm all for tenants having a safe, good standard place to live. Absolutely think that's the right thing to do. But I've not yet seen a licensing system that has done anything other than just make additional revenue for the council. Now, if that's what it is, then just call it what it is, a tax. It's an extra tax that that area puts on landlords. But why is it dressed up as something that helps people when, to date, I've not seen anything that benefits tenants in any meaningful way? Rob, if that sounds unfair, then, you know, in the interest of balance, please say. I mean, we are the property podcast, so we obviously have slightly biased views here. But do you want to try and offer some balance to my critique?
I can't. I'd love to bring some balance, but I can't do it. I just flat out do not see the point at all. I've not seen any evidence that it improves anything at all. The thing is, all the enforcement powers are already there. The issue is that they're not being enforced because local authorities don't have the resources to do it. And just requiring people to get an expensive piece of paper saying that they've done these things without checking that they have done these things doesn't seem to actually improve the situation at all. And the people who aren't doing what they're meant to aren't going to put their hands up for a license. And because there's no central record of who landlords are, you're not going to know who they are anyway. And yes, the fact that it's coming in for all 10 Manchester boroughs apparently is not good news for landlords there because it is an extra cost. But let's face it, it's coming everywhere at some point. Every week, a new council is announcing one of these schemes. We don't even report on it most of the time because it just happens so often, it's barely even news. Eventually, I think it's just going to be a reality for landlords everywhere. Just another box that needs to be ticked and another fee that needs to be paid.
Well, let's cheer us up, Rob, because we both love dogs and so do 45% of landlords, apparently. Because when surveyed, 45% have said they like well-behaved pets in their properties. I'm assuming the other 55% don't, but at least 45% do. And unsurprisingly, it's a higher percentage of tenants at 61%. This links back to the model tenancy agreements, where you now have to accept pets if you follow the model tenancy agreement. But unfortunately, Rob, most landlords don't follow that agreement.
No, so the whole thing around the model agreement itself is all a bit of a nothing. But it seems to be a bit of a political cause at the moment to make it easier for tenants to have pets. And as you've just said, nearly half of landlords are warm to the idea anyway. A big reason that many are not open to it is that you can't charge an extra damage deposit. And this is a real unintended consequence. So a couple of years back, the maximum deposit that you could charge a tenant was capped at 5 weeks' rent. And that came in at the same time as the ban of charging fees to tenants, which I still think was a good thing, even though almost no one agrees with me. But the consequence of this was that landlords were now less inclined to take pets because previously it'd be quite common to charge an extra deposit amount to cover any damage that gets caused or to cover cleaning the carpets at the end of the tenancy and that sort of thing. And now you could no longer do it. So it's a safer bet if you've got a choice to take tenants without a pet than those with. Some MPs now seem to have noticed this, and they're now pushing for a change in the law that allows landlords to require insurance to anyone who wants to come and rent with a pet. To me, that seems a bit convoluted, and I don't know why you couldn't just make an exception that allows you to charge a higher deposit, which is what landlords were doing before this change and was working perfectly well. But in any case, I like the approach of actually listening to the concerns of landlords and seeing what the blockers are and fixing those rather than just trying to bludgeon something through. And as we said on the podcast before, while many landlords currently won't accept pets, there's an opportunity for those who do. And because there is a shortage of pet-friendly accommodation, tenants with pets can actually stay longer, which reduces voids. So for me, even with the rules as they are now, still something I'd strongly consider.
So it's time for our listener success story. And even though we do this pretty much every week, we're never short of a story or two, because clearly we have a very successful audience, Rob. So, Rob, who are we admiring this week?
Well, this week, a huge, huge round of applause for Jasper, who has written in to say, thanks to the podcast, which I came across in late 2017. It gave me the confidence, knowledge and inspiration to buy my first property less than a year later, which I converted into a 5-bed HMO, now giving an ROI of 19%. That's good, but it carries on. Today, I now own 5 HMOs, which has allowed me to leave my job and do property full time. In late 2019, I set up an HMO management company, and by the end of this year, we expected to have 70 to 100 rooms under management. I find it remarkable how fast things have progressed since listening to the first episode of the podcast back in 2017. It's truly a dream come true. Well, that is an incredible story. You've done what so many people dream of doing, which is being able to use property to quit their job. And although you now created a new job for yourself in property management, it sounds like one that you're really relishing and enjoying. So well done to you. Fantastic.
We seem to be doing pretty well on Hub Extra at the moment. And this week, I feel we're still coming in strong. And we have to thank one of our economic idols, Ray Dalio. Ray Dalio, one of the wealthiest men in the world, who builds one of the most successful hedge funds in the world, has been exceptionally generous with sharing his knowledge and insights that he's picked up over his many years on the planet. And his book, Principles, is absolutely one of our favourites. And he's continued to release information, education, his thoughts on the world, the global economy, and we offer reference him on the podcast. Well, the man clearly is still in a giving mood, and he's released a personality test, which you can find on principlesu.com. principlesu.com. And if you've done a Myers-Briggs type test before, you'll be familiar with this. You answer certain questions about your personality and it gives you a profile at the end. This is something that Rob and I have done on regular occasions and we've done with many of the team at Property Hub, because it's really useful to understand others and how they work and what makes them tick and what they find challenging. But also, I think more importantly, it's really important for your own self-awareness to know, you know, what am I good at? Let's own that. Let's try and find a way that I can maximize my time doing those things. And what am I not so good at? Yes, you should compensate for them so it doesn't hurt you, but then other ways to minimize how much time you spend on those type of tasks. And actually, once you start giving it some thought and become a little bit creative, then it's actually quite easy to do. So the reason why I love this resource is, one, it's so useful and I highly recommend it, taking the time to answer all the questions and get the report and really trying to understand yourself. But two, most of these reports cost a fair bit of money. You know, we've paid 50 quid a report before. And Ray Dalio, well, he's built all this, delivered all this, and it's absolutely free. I mean, that's absolutely fantastic. I don't think you'll ever listen to these podcasts, but if he does, thank you, Ray. This is a brilliant resource.
So that is us done for another week. Not quite creating as much value in the world as Ray Dalio just yet, but we're doing our best and hopefully you've got a lot out of this week's episode. We're going to be back as always with Ask Rob and Rob on Tuesday. Then this time next week on Thursday, we're going to be talking about the property boom that everyone seems to be in denial about. We're going to be talking about what's happening, why it's happening, how long it'll last and how you can play it. So you're not going to want to miss that one. Until then, have a wonderful week and we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.